Hey, everybody, it's me here, Michael Franti, on the Stay Human podcast. Man, we are super excited because we've got a new album that is coming out. It's called Work Hard and Be Nice. 17 songs, that's right, you heard it, 17 songs filled with optimism and stories about how we get through challenging times and still hold on to our humanity. We can't wait to get back out on the road with you guys, so stay tuned to all of my socials. You'll get the information first about when we're going to be touring next. In the meantime, enjoy all the songs on the album, Work Hard, Be Nice. You can Spotify it. You can stream it all over the place. You can download it on iTunes. You can even get the CD from michaelfranti.com. So check it out. Colorado at the Breckenridge Brewery, and we have our very special guest, Garrett, or as he is known as, G-Lo! All right, G.
Wow.
Man, it is awesome to have you here. And man, how long have we been knowing each other?
Actually, I was thinking about today because it's documented.
Yeah.
The first time that we performed together was in 1994.
Yeah.
In Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah.
At Pine Street.
Cedar Fest.
And it was...
Redwood.
Tree. You.
Some kind of a tree.
Us and Soul Coughing.
That's right.
And it was the only time that that bill ever happened.
Yeah.
Which was pretty cool.
Did Soul Coughing have a stand-up bass?
They did, yeah.
That's what I remember, because you guys had one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good show. I remember it was blazing hot that day.
Yeah, yeah.
And that great radio station... 105.
Yeah.
Great radio station. Because the DJs actually selected the music right there. It was like, what am I going to play? I think I'll... And I'd throw him like a little Fronty CD. And throw him a little G-Love CD. Maybe you should play one of them.
but they had like a... It was pretty cool because that town, and I'm sure it was the same for you, Minneapolis, like Rev 105 really supported the type of kind of hip-hop influenced... You know, hip hop outlier type of thing that we were doing and you were doing, and that was like one of our best towns ever.
Yeah,
you know? So that was
still
pretty
for us too.
Yeah. Still, it was it's pretty cool day. So someone snapped a picture of us backstage.
Oh, nice!
Right after my set, right before your set, and we're just sitting there like, it's pretty cool, man.
Hey, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Philadelphia.
Okay. I knew that too, because I've spent time out there.
I know.
Rough House, and I know you have too.
Yeah.
And so, when you were growing up in your house, was it like a musical house or?
No. It really wasn't. It was more like a TV house. You know,
you look kind of like Mike TV from Willy Wonka.
Well, yeah, like my mom would watch the Today Show every morning, and then, you know, like. You know, news at night, and then, you know, when we were kids, we had, like, Tuesdays was the A-team, and, you know, whatever else was going on. But, but in the basement, I was one of those kids that would, you know, kind of go through all my parents' stuff, you know. Yeah. Like, if I was home alone, I would be digging through their closets and just discovering stuff in the basement. And I found
my
mom's.
Did you go through your mom's underwear?
I went through everything, man. Oh, I found all their stuff. I mean, but you know, like... I found my mom's record collection, which was small, but it was great. And it had Dr. John's In the Right Place in the Wrong Time.
Oh,
it had Donovan's Greatest Hits from the 60s, not our friend Donovan.
Yeah.
It had John Denver. It had Bob Marley, Rasta Man Vibration.
Wow.
It had the Blues Brothers. It had the Beatles' White Album.
Wow.
It had Bob Dylan's Greatest Hits Volume 1. So those records...
That's pretty much
really like... That
those
was
are like the Ten Commandments of music right there.
Yeah, and to this day, like, those records have been the biggest influence. You
know? Wow. So what's your earliest memory as a kid?
Wow, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. As a kid, maybe, like, pooping my pants, watching TV or something like that.
Wow.
I mean,
nice.
I don't know. I mean, that sounds kind of weird, but that maybe, I don't know. But I'll tell you my first concert memory. I remember my first concert was my parents took me to the Blues Brothers.
Wow.
At the Mann Music Center.
How old were you?
I must have been 8 years old.
Wow.
And I remember John Belushi came on stage and did, like, three, you know, back flips or like handsprings, right? And you know he was like a short, stubby guy and probably on a ton of cocaine and everything else. And that concert made such a huge impression on me.
Since that time, you've always wanted to be a short, stubby cocaine. What was your family like? Were your parents together? Or did you have a happy house?
Very happy house. My mother and father have been married now for close to 50 years.
Wow.
Which is, especially, in our generation and everything, is just, it's hard to see how they did it. Yeah. And they still do it. And they, they're best friends. And I have a younger sister. And we grew up in Center City, Philadelphia. Uh-huh. A very supportive household. When I started getting into my music as a teenager, my father was very supportive of me, and I got into music real early. And
how old were you?
I was eight. My mother put me in guitar lessons when I was eight. I was drumming on the back of the car seat.
Mm-hmm. And she was like, enough of this.
And she was like, I remember, she goes, oh, you got the beat, kid, or something. You know? And she said, what do you want? You want to play an instrument? I said, oh, yeah, I want to play guitar.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't know why. So she put me into folk guitar lessons, right?
That's awesome.
And I was learning, the first song was this folk song called Down in the Valley. Down in the valley, valley so low. And I hated playing guitar. I was terrible at it. It hurt my fingers. My mom started doing lessons with me, and she got better than me. So I don't know why I didn't quit, but I never quit. And by the time I was 13, I could tune it.
Yeah.
It took me 5 years. And then,
that must have been fun for your parents. Can you get the kid with the out-of-tune guitar to go in another room and practice?
But then, when I was 15, I wrote my first song, and
it was a song
kind of how I write a lot now, kind of about a lot of different things in my life. So I was in love with my first girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely was in love with her, and also my best friend Jason Brown, who's now my manager, he was going to boarding school, right? Because he got caught selling weed at our school, so they were encouraging him to go away, right? So I was, I was 15. I was sad. My best friend was leaving, to go to Vermont, and so I just wrote this song, kind of a knee-jerk reaction to life, and I don't know why I wrote it.
Can you sing a little bit?
Yeah, it went like, we shared the best, we had the worst, but it's always been just the two of us, just the two of us. Just the two of us. We can make it if we try.
You wrote that, man.
So after that, it was like I found my voice, and songwriting was it. And to me, songwriting has always been this thing that's like I said, like a knee jerk reaction to life. And sure, now as songwriters, we're always writing songs and everything, and sometimes you write them for the right reasons, sometimes you write them just because you feel like you have to write a song.
Yeah.
And sometimes, all different ways to write songs now. Yeah. But
what was the hardest part of being a teenager for you?
Oh, I really had a good teenage experience, I don't want to lie, but I was kind of the man, I was good at basketball. I was like,
you still are.
I was like the star of the basketball team. High school. Yeah, man. We never got to play one on one, and now your knees messed up. So
I'll still take you.
But yeah,
did you have aspirations to be an athlete?
I did. It was always like hoops and music.
Yeah.
And honestly, I was way better at hoops than I was at music.
That's how I was too. What did you learn from sports, or perhaps even team sports, especially about that you have applied to your life, that's applied to your music?
I find a lot of similarities. I find when I'm with a producer, I look at a producer like I look at a coach, right? I want to have that type of relationship where I'm putting myself onto his team, even though I'm bringing my certain skill set, but I want to be coached, right? So I look at that like that, and then of course, like being on a team, you know, and the camaraderie of being on a team, and you know, just the ups and downs, the victories, the losses, the emotional ups and downs you go through as a team is very similar to music. The thing that's different about music and sports, which is the hardest thing about music, and I'm sure you can relate, is that we never know if we win or lose, right? Like when you play a game, you know if you win or lose, right? It's a concrete thing. And even if you didn't play your best, you still won, right?
Yeah.
Music, we could come off stage and really feel terrible about a performance because we thought we could have been that much better.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people can come up and say, that was the best show I ever saw you play. Yeah. Or, like, different people in your band could come off and say, man, that show was amazing. And, and some people could say, that show sucked. What are you talking about? So it's very, like, you know, it's a hard thing to pin down.
Yeah. The good thing is, though, is if you go to a sports stadium, half the people there go home disappointed. And I guarantee you, your show's like a very small percentage of any going disappointed.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
I was...
Hey, everybody. It's Michael Franti here on the Stay Human podcast. A few years back, my wife, Sarah, and I decided that we would start a nonprofit with the intention of bringing people with advanced stages of life-threatening illness, children and adults with special needs, and wounded veterans to see any live concert by any artist in any city in the world. And from that, Do It For The Love was born. If you have a friend or family member who needs music in that way, just write to us at doitfortheLove.org, and we'll make sure to get them out to see any concert in any city by any artist. Do it for the love, y'all.
I was, the last time we played together was at the OC State Fair.
Yeah.
And Michael and I have been playing shows, you know, seeing each other anywhere from the Ross Gilday Fest. Yeah. I think that's the first time really saw you. I mean, that was, we had an amazing show that day too. I went over to see your show. I was really blown away. And last time we played, I was so inspired, man. The way that you do your show is so different from anybody. You know, like for instance, Michael get up on stage, and by the second song, he's already got like four guests up there with him on stage, including me, a girl out of the audience. And then by the third song, he's like out in the crowd for five songs. And I was so inspired. It was like a love. I really was like, this is a love fest. And and it was a beautiful moment. I remember I called you after the show. I went home. I was so inspired. I went home and wrote a song. I don't know. I just...
Good stuff.
It's really inspirational to get to see other performers and, you know, to see what everybody's approach is so different to music. And it's just really wonderful to see,
you
know, the changes that you've gone through over
there. That's the thing that I like about you is that I feel like your music is authentic to the person that you are. And now hearing a little bit about your life, I can see where it's come from. And I'm going to open it up to you guys to ask a question in a second. But how did you get these influences that you have? You told us about like sort of the folk and the blues guitar style. But at what point did like rap and hip hop come into your being? I mean, maybe you've heard it, but what point did you go, maybe I could do that?
Yeah, like, so we grew up, you know, kind of the first generation of kids listening to hip-hop, right? Like, I'm 45, Michael's a little bit older, but he was making records when I was a teenager. So, you know, grew up with, you know, Run DMC and LL Cool J, and then I played in this basketball league in Philly, and I was one of the only white kids in the league, and one of my friends came over, he said, hey, yo, Garrett, and I have a line in one of my raps goes, put these headphones on your ears. I was converted then and practiced it for years, rap music, because he put on the Beastie Boys and it was hold it now, hit it.
Yeah.
And he goes, and I was like, oh yeah, it's cool. He goes, yeah, they're white, just like you. And I was like, no, they're not. And he was like, yeah, check it out, they are. And I was like, but still, even at that time, there was the Beastie Boys and Third Bass, and I mean, you know, whatever. It's hip hop is black music, and it's cultural music, and it got so big that it became the music of the youth.
Yeah.
And it was exciting. And there was, in Philadelphia, there was a Friday night program on Power 99 FM called Street Beat with Lady B. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time you heard, like, Public Enemy, Terminator X, and being, like, scared.
Yeah.
Like, like, really, like, remember being like, whoa, this is turning this shit on. This is crazy. And, but yeah, like, you know, in high school, De La Soul came out. And there was the thing, and Boogie Down Productions, and, you know, and Eric B. and Rakim, and we knew every lyric. So one day, as a street musician, I'm sitting on the street and playing some blues, and I started rapping Paid in Full at the end of the song. And at that moment, I had epiphany, and I said, oh, well, this is something different. Yeah. I was always searching for something that someone else wasn't doing.
Yeah.
And I realized at that point, I did it. And then also around that time, you had Disposable Heroes of Hip-Hopercy, so I had that record. And, you know, the Far Side, Gangstar, everything. And it was, and then once I saw, and then, so after that moment on the street, I went home that week and I wrote my first rap over a slide riff called Rhyme for a Summertime. And it was about bike couriers in Philadelphia.
I used to be a bike messenger in San Francisco.
It was such a culture, you know, back in the day. And it was, so I always try to write about, you know, the city of Philadelphia and kind of like urban poetry about what I was seeing.
Cool. Hey, we got time. I think just we're getting the signal here. We got one question here. Yeah. Fire away.
Rombello 1, Rombello 2. Is there a Rombello
3? Rombello 3?
Well, Fambello.
Fambello, yeah. So for those of you who don't know, Rombello is like a floating cruise festival with awesome, you know, amazing bands on it. And we did it for two times and then it kind of stopped. But we are trying to resurrect something. I don't know if it'll be called Rombello, but it will definitely have family in it. Yeah.
We should do a destination festival too.
Yeah.
Like that, closer to the sun. Yeah, actually, this is a funny story. Slightly Stupid, who was also in the first year of Rombello, they do a destination show in Mexico called Closer to the Sun.
Yeah.
So I'm part of it every year, go down. And so I get off the plane with my girlfriend, Kelsey. And then we're going, walking out through customs. And I look up and I see the tallest dude with no shoes on in the airport. I said, oh, that's Michael Franti. Hey, Michael, with his wife, Saran. I said, Michael, what are you doing? Hey, it's the only time he's ever on vacation, right?
I was on vacation with my wife's family. I had like 12 in-laws there with me.
So then, of course, I dragged Michael on his vacation. He came up and we did a big jam, and it was pretty awesome. So.
And we were staying in a hotel about a mile down the road, and my whole family was bored stiff. They're sitting there going, well, what are we going to do? And I was like, well, you know my friend G Love, he's playing down the road. And they were like, really? So I took my whole fam, they're all Persian. And some are recently from Iran. So they all came down to see G and see Slightly Stupid, and they had a great time. And the next day we woke up and we're like, well, what do you want to do there? Hey, is the festival still on? Can we go back to the festival?
Michael's like, all I want to do on my time off is like go to a festival. Like, I don't know, what is that like for you? It's like, you know, as a musician, like, I was a concert kid. Like, I would sneak into all these concerts, snuck into Fleetwood Mac. I snuck into the Allman Brothers. Yeah. I snuck in everywhere. I snuck into Neil Young. I went to every concert. I went to the Philly Folk Fest, everything. And now we play 100, 200, 250 shows a year. And it's like,
it's
I look
rare
at the crowd and I'm like, I give a lot of props to the crowd because we're up there putting a lot of energy out, but it's hard to stand
there. Hard to go there, and
for
make it through and wait in line to get in and get tickets
props
online.
To the crowd.
Hey, we got to go, but this is the Stay Human podcast, and we ask everybody at the end of it, how do you stay human?
I stay human by, I've been meditating this past year. That's really helped me to kind of renew my focus and center myself, and also just getting plenty of exercise, enjoying the time off with my family, and really just enjoying the moments, the musical moments as well, because that's kind of my whole life revolves around that. So that helps me deal with the travel and the ups and downs of the music business, but just the music and the love, and you know, we try to my goal is to make people happy every day. Nice. And that's kind of, you know, every day I say a mantra before I go on stage, but like an affirmation, but you know, that's it. Like, our job is to make people happy. So that's a pretty
good great job,
you know, so yeah. I'm happy to be here.
All right, y'all. Thank you for being on the Stay Human podcast today, Garrett. You can follow him on Instagram, Facebook, all those places. He's all over it. From here at the Breckenridge Brewery in Breckenridge, Colorado. KBCO in the house, too. We love y'all. Hey everybody, this is Michael Franti here on the Stay Human podcast, and I've traveled all throughout the world and I've been to many inspiring places, and one of my favorites is Bali. I fell in love with its people and nature the first time that I came here in 2007, and at that time I had a dream to build a place that was dedicated to music, soul, and wellness. And from that, the Soulshine Bali Hotel was born. It's my boutique hotel located in the heart of Bali, surrounded by beautiful rice fields and the most incredible sunsets that you might ever experience. We do over 50 retreats a year, or you can just come here and spend a night on your own. So follow us on Instagram at Soulshine Bali.